Town, Atlanta. Excuse me. And he sees his own panel of patients at the Ponce Infectious Disease Center, a local AIDS clinic that provides comprehensive care to the uninsured. Additionally, Dr. Malbranch conducts research exploring the racial, gender, age, and cultural factors that influence black men's health, particularly with regard to sexual risk behaviors and HIV testing practices. I present to you Dr. David Malbranch.
Good afternoon. I want to thank Dr. Sellers for giving me an extra 5 minutes. Hopefully I won't use them up and I'll leave enough time. I want to talk about the social context of same-sex disclosure and sexual risk behavior among behaviorally bisexual black men. I have absolutely nothing to disclose. Looking at the background of kind of why this issue was important to me, looking at the HIV racial disparity among black MSM and heterosexual women, you can see that that's been kind of splashed through the headlines. And if you look at subpopulations within the black community, it's MSM and heterosexual women that are most disproportionately affected. There's been a lot of talk about a bisexual bridge theory. Unfortunately, there's been a lot of conflicting and insufficient evidence, most of which is surrounding the fact that you can't ask a lot of folks, and you may not be able to rely on who's people having sex with, and you're going by reporting a lot of times. And unless you follow people around, sometimes you can't really trace who they're having sex with and who they're using condoms with. There's actually been a lot of discussion about a moral linkage of disclosure and condom use, meaning that people are getting things a little bit twisted, and they automatically equate if someone does not disclose their same-sex behavior, that automatically means that they're less likely to use condoms, which we have enough evidence with black MSM to know that this isn't necessarily the case. And then finally, but probably most importantly, the voices of these brothers have really not been heard outside of J.L. King on Oprah and maybe some media sensationalized reports that aren't really the real stories. But if you look in the public health literature, there's really not that much. One of the recent studies that I've seen was by Brian Dodge, Billy Jeffries, who's in the back, and Teo Sanford, who actually did a qualitative study for the special bisexual issues in the Archives of Sexual Behavior that came out a little bit earlier this year. So the methods for the study, we called the study the Gatekeeper Study, and I have to thank Cleo Monago out of Los Angeles. He hit me to a brother from Burkina Faso named Maladoma Somme, who talked about bisexuality and homosexuality, the brothers in Burkina Faso being seen as gatekeepers to a larger spiritual world. So when he looked at the issue of bisexuality, he basically said, if you ostracize someone because they're bisexual, not only does the individual lose, and not only are they traumatized, but the community also suffers. So we wanted to actually recognize that these brothers aren't just as pathological as everyone wants to make them out to be. We had a two-year R21 mechanism from the National Institute of Childhood and Human Development from August of 2006 to August 08. We conducted 38 qualitative semi-structured interviews. We recruited brothers through websites like Adam for Adam, Black Gay Chat, Men for Now, used local phone chat lines in Atlanta, and sometimes we went into the men looking for sex with men, and then sometimes we went into the men looking for sex for women and recruited people from either of those phone chat lines. We also did flyer distribution at local community areas and then snowball sampling. For eligibility requirements, they had to identify as black or African American, be between the ages of 18 and 45, live in Atlanta, and report having sex with both men and women in the past 6 months. This was very important to us, and we defined sex not by the Bill Clinton terminology, but actually we included oral, anal, and vaginal. So if you reported yes to any of those, you were included. And it also, we didn't focus on orientation or what your identity label was. You had to actually report that you had this behavior in order to get into the study. We offered the gentleman $50 compensation, and they did a brief demographic survey, and we did coding analysis using NVivo 7. I won't get into all the details with that, basically because it would take too much time. The main two research questions we wanted to ask looked at what are the social forces that influence the patterns of same-sex disclosure in varying social situations and personal intimate relationships, and then the second question was what factors, including same-sex disclosure, shape their sexual behavior and condom use practices with both their male and female sexual partners. Just a look at the descriptive results. The age groups was pretty much split down the middle. 50% were between 18 and 29, 50% were between 30 and 45. HIV status, 37% reported that they were HIV positive. The remaining 63% reported that they were HIV negative or unknown. Sexual identification, all of the men in the study identified as either bisexual or heterosexual. None of them claimed on a list same gender loving, homosexual, gay, anything like that. And the personal income ranged between anywhere from $15,000 a year to about $60,000 a year. When we look at the major themes, there were four major themes that came forth from our analysis. And we talked about heterogeneous life experiences, the decisional balance of same-sex disclosure, the vibe and the flow of sexual behavior, and then the final one was looking at fear factors, situations, and condom use. I'm going to focus on decisional balance of same-sex disclosure and fear factor, situations, and condom use, because those seem to be the most important. I will mention, though, just for the sake of this, that the vibe and flow of sexual behavior, what we noticed is that there wasn't really a rhyme or reason a lot of times to different sexual behaviors and condom use. Some people would just say, well, I felt comfortable with so-and-so, or if they had a certain vibe, I would either engage in this behavior or decide not to use condoms. And that was regardless of whether they were female or male sexual partners. There seemed to be some kind of connection that the men couldn't quite articulate, but they just described it repeatedly as a vibe or a flow, and we couldn't ignore that when we were looking at it. So when we look at same-sex disclosure, there was kind of a continuum along these lines. We put them into three categories. The first category was full disclosure, which was typically, and I didn't put this here, but male sexual partners were the most often that full disclosure would happen to, and also medical providers. There was also a category of omission of information, and that could have been male-female sexual partners or selectively choosing family. And that means if a person doesn't ask, I'm not going to tell. And then total secrecy, which usually was with coworkers, sexual partners, mostly female sexual partners, and then certain family members. For full disclosure, just to give you a quote, the interviewer asked an ingenual, who do you think it's important to tell about your sexuality? The participant responded, the people I'm dealing with, nobody else. For omission of information, we asked, why don't they, meaning your female sexual partners, need to know about your same-sex behavior? And he said, this is an interesting quote, do she only tell or share how many guys she done fucked and what she did with them? I mean, how many dicks she done suck? I ain't the first dick you suck, so I mean, you ain't tell me that, so it goes both ways, dude. Now, I don't use that kind of terminology, but I'm just trying to stay, I'm maintaining the integrity of what the brother said to us. I never use that kind of language in private settings. But that was an interesting quote, because he was basically saying, why should I disclose if other people don't disclose their past behaviors, which was an interesting thought. And then total secrecies, one of the gentlemen said, no, they, meaning my co-workers, don't need to know nothing. When I go to work, it's work, and I don't think they need to know none of my business. I usually don't tell them nothing about me. They just, they got just what you see is what you get. And that was usually, 100% of the time, that was the way it was with work. Nobody needed to know all the business. When we talked about condom use, one of the main facilitators of consistent condom use was fear of disease with both men and women, and then fear of pregnancy with women. And the fear of pregnancy, we didn't expect to come up as much as it did, but it really did come up a lot with these gentlemen. We asked one gentleman, what helped you use condoms consistently with men? He said, what helped me? The threat of disease, STD, constant threat, life, you know, life. Another person said, contracting a disease, I ain't trying to get shit, and I ain't trying to give my wife shit. That's an interesting quote, because what it spoke to was that when he goes out there, he was basically saying, a lot of these guys said this, with casual partners, particularly male casual partners, they would use condoms more frequently, but they wouldn't use condoms with their primary female partners. And then the last quote here was, how often do you have unprotected sex with women, we asked, and they said, never. Not only do I have a risk of catching HIV and STD, but being their baby daddy, no. So he didn't want to hear that either. When we looked at situational determinants, these were like the barriers. And when you look at the literature, what we found, I'm not going to include any quotes on this, but the main sub-themes that we came up with were heat of the moment. It just felt good at the time. I didn't want to go back and have a condom. Intoxication. I was either drunk or high and didn't feel like using a condom. Or trust, the type of relationship. Someone I've been with for a long period of time, someone I trusted. And if you look at the heterosexual literature, the MSM literature, the bisexual literature, all this stuff reflects some of these general human notions about why people decide not to use condoms in certain situations. I'm going to present this quote from a gentleman who kind of brought a lot of these complexities with condom use together when he talked to us. He said, I would always use a condom with a woman, but as far as a guy, because a guy can't get pregnant. But I mean, if we are both okay and we establish we ain't and we ain't really, and he was meaning we ain't really got any diseases, got tested for HIV and both are clean, and after a certain amount of time, I would say a year, and trust has been built and we trust each other and we just know that we'll be faithful to each other and not go out and do nothing crazy, I wouldn't use condoms. So you can see in this quote, he's basically saying there's this determination that a guy can't get pregnant. And then he brings in the issue of getting tested with someone at the same time, and that's kind of a reassurance. And then the issue of trust. You know somebody for a long period of time. You feel trustworthy with them. You think you're both clean because you both get tested. And then you make a conscience-informed decision not to use condoms at that point. One of the things we wanted to talk about was looking at same-sex disclosure and condom use and what the possible relationship between the two. And, you know, the interesting thing was that none of the guys really stated that disclosing their same-sex behavior was actually somehow related to whether they would use condoms or not. We did find one quote from one participant who spoke to it, but kind of in a little different way. We asked him, why don't you tell, meaning your females, or why do you choose not to tell them, regardless of whether they ask or not? And he said, because I personally don't think that it's any of their business. I don't think that a person should be openly telling people about their sex life. Yeah, you are entering into some, you are putting that other person's life on the line, but if you're totally safe with both sexes, then, you know what I'm saying, it's nothing to explain or talk about. Meaning that, why do I have to tell all this business if I'm being responsible with condoms? And that was the one quote that we had that really kind of brought those two together. What we did notice about the sample is that a lot of the guys mentioned that they were the main initiators of condoms and then reported that they were using condoms a lot. But when we pinned them down and really talked about behaviors, there would be a slightly nuance to the story. And a lot of them did know particularly differentials between anal sex, vaginal sex, oral sex, and what was more risky and with whom. But there seemed to be a disconnect. So you know all this stuff, but then you make a choice. And I'm going to put a couple of quotes on now and read those because they'll spoke to kind of the motivations behind this. So he said, what made you not put on a condom with a woman when you had one? The gentleman said, because I wanted to feel the real sensation. With a condom, it just goes back to what I was saying. I just don't like condoms. I just don't like them. Even though I know it's safe, I mean, that's just like my kids say or my parents say, you got to eat beets or broccoli because that's good for you. I eat them because I know it's good for you, but whether I like them or not, that's a different story. I like some of the stuff in the health food store that I buy because I know it's good for me, but whether I like it, but whether or not I really like it, that's a different story. Along that same continuum, another gentleman said, we asked, if you know about the risk for HIV, why would you engage in sex like that without a condom? He said, well, you know, I guess because after the person, after I get in my mind that I know this person, you know, and the wise thing should be just that, you know, that person, it doesn't mean that that person might not have anything. Sometimes I get into the point of where, hell, I just want to have unprotected sex. I just want to have unprotected sex. Even if it sounds stupid, but, you know, you're doing something risky. But, hey, you know, well, if something happens, you know, it's like, hell, you know, we'll find out what happens afterwards. I'll do the test or something. And fortunately, things have been all right. So there's almost like this knowledge, but then still at the same point, you're kind of throwing it to the wind. And there's a parallel. You could think about the same things with why people smoke, why we eat fatty foods, why we do all these other things. But the difference with this is that this impacts another person as well. And so it was interesting to see that kind of disconnect between the knowledge and the behaviors. So in conclusion, we noticed that there was no one life story for black bisexual men. Not everybody's on the down low. Not everybody was sexually abused as children. Not everybody, their first experience was in prison. There was a wide variety from the prison to the childhood sexual abuse to the starting off as situational sex for money and then just developed into something else. And then there were people with stable two-parent households, made a lot of money, and then just were bisexual. That was it. So there's no one life story that can kind of capture who black bisexual men are. We noticed, like I said before, the decisional balance of same-sex disclosure, which looked at the situational context, work, families, or female or male relationships, and what the type of relationship was. The individual context, was it a female that I didn't trust, or she would be questioning my masculinity, or was it a guy that I felt more comfortable with? And then there was a continuum along this whole line. So there was no Project Runway moment. It wasn't like Heidi Klum saying, you know, you're in or you're out with disclosure. It's not that simple. It's kind of people have a continuum and they make decisions based on situations and individual considerations. There was also minimal described influence of same-sex disclosure on condom use outside of the quote that I showed you previously. And then I just want to note that the human influences on condom use were common. So again, heat of the moment, whether you're under the influence of alcohol or drugs, and then how you trust. This whole issue of trust and love and feeling something for somebody really influences people in spite of the knowledge that these men have, which is not that much different from heterosexuals, MSM, so on and so forth. And then we did notice that, as I mentioned a couple times, the knowledge and behavior disconnect. I can't stress this enough. We do have to keep pushing knowledge in our behavioral interventions, but it's not going to be sufficient in the future. Limitations were basically that, one, it was a convenient sample in Atlanta, Georgia. We can't make this generalizable. I can't say this represents the thoughts or opinions of all black bisexual men in the United States. We're doing some intra-sample analysis pending, meaning between the different age groups, between men who are positive and men who are negative, to kind of tease out some of these differences. This was the first level of analysis we did. And then we also noted the potentially socially desirable responses. A lot of these guys said they were the main initiators of condoms and that they use condoms all the time. They may have been saying that to us because they felt that's what they were supposed to say. And like I said, when we really asked about the details with behaviors, some other issues kind of came out. And then we didn't specifically discuss types of relationships. When we asked about male and female sexual partners, we didn't say, was this your married, someone you were married to? They would actually forward information, whether it was a wife, whether it was a girlfriend they had been with for a long period of time. But I think to do future research on this, we really need to nail down the difference between a primary partner and a casual sexual partner. So in future directions, springboarding off this study, we need more nuanced public health approaches to the issue of disclosure and condom use. You can't equate one with the other anymore. It's just something that's a little bit more detailed than that, and it's a little bit more intricate than that. HIV prevention interventions, again, like I said, knowledge is definitely necessary, but it's not sufficient for our behavior, as these men demonstrated. And the focus, we need to focus our prevention efforts not on black bisexual men as a target group, but I'd rather focus on sexual behaviors. So if you're screening, ask about, have you had unprotected anal sex with a man or a woman, unprotected vaginal sex with a woman, oral sex, and screen that way instead of going by identities and then working backwards. There is no one-size-fits-all approach, and even within this small 38 men sample, there was a wide heterogeneity of responses and life stories and sexual journeys that they described. We do need more qualitative and quantitative work. And then it also spoke to me as a medical provider, and I work in an HIV clinic, and I also work at I'm an internist that works at downtown Grady Hospital, the importance of sexual history taking and HIV testing in clinical settings. It's not just going to be good just to kind of blanket everybody with HIV testings, but we really have to train our medical providers, that includes PAs, nurse practitioners, as well as physicians, to really take more nuanced sexual histories if we're really going to get to the specific risk behaviors that's driving this epidemic. My acknowledgments definitely to the men who told the stories. I had a great project director, Tashin Jackson, who did a majority of the interviews. I conducted some of them myself as well. And then I had an amazing research team, Kim Ariola, Tyrell Jenkins, who is here somewhere. There you are, Tyrell. Emily Daria and Shilpa Patel. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Malbranch. Our next speaker is scheduled to be Dr. Mary Shagog, who's an alumni of Hampton University as well as the University of South Carolina. She's currently working on her dissertation on HIV-STI risk behaviors among African-American college students enrolled in predominantly white institutions. Unfortunately, Dr. Shagog had to leave APHA due to a family emergency.